Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Age of Radio.
Hello there, folks, and thank you for listening to the show.
I'm Joanna.
I'm Nate, and this is Stranger Than. Today is the end of Joanna's Bridgewater Triangle saga.
It is.
This has been a large undertaking with many ins and outs, I suppose.
It has.
And I'm going to miss it. I'll miss it.
I'm going to miss it, too. I am going to miss just automatically knowing what I'm going to be doing. And now I'm not going to have to, like, get creative again. Like, God damn it.
You're just going to have to find a new place that's steeped in what have you.
Steeped in paranormal activities and
yeah.
Deeply haunted.
Maybe we can find another cool cryptid.
Yeah, maybe so. Puckwudgies were a thing I had no idea existed before the Bridgewater Triangle.
And my life is the better for knowing that they do, or may, or did, or all three.
That's, yes. I have a quick corrections to make. Little corrections corner here. Last episode, I accidentally, when I was talking about the murder of Mary Lou Arruda, I had said that, you know, that her murder didn't have anything to do with the supposed satanic cult murders committed by, I accidentally said Drew Peterson instead of Carl Drew, and so I just wanted to, like, throw that out there. I hate it when I'm doing the listen through of the show before we post, and then I hear myself say something like that. I'm just like, God fucking damn it.
Well, you know, like, technically speaking, we could punch it in. I mean, all you have to do is record the right name into your recorder, and then send me the file and tell me where to dump it in, and I can easily do it.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but that just seemed like a lot of work at the time. Right. I mean, if it's easy for you to do, then maybe next time I'll do that. For right now, I'm just gonna call out my corrections here that I needed to make on that. To be fair, we had done a bonus episode where the murderer's name was Drew Peterson. And there's Carl Drew, so I
Drew
mean
in both names. Yeah,
Drew in both names, and I just misspoke, so there you go. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, the amount of emails we got about that is just insane.
I know, I know.
We
people just like,
emails.
You said it wrong.
That's wasn't not who right. It was.
Uh-huh.
Well, why don't you get us started here, Joanna? Let's hear your Bridgewater Triangle finale.
Okay. And my sources for today, and I get that all up front because I forgot to say them in the show last time, but I believe Nate did go ahead and put them in the show notes. But
I tried, but you sent them to me as a picture, and the picture wouldn't upload, so I didn't feel like typing all the things out. I don't know how it happened.
But, how did I send that to you as a picture? I thought I just...
I don't know.
I copied and pasted and sent it as an email? I don't know. That's weird. Well, okay. I guess maybe we'll have to, I'll have to do another corrections on that too. Actually, that's going to upset me. So I am going to go ahead and call them out.
Yeah.
I'm going to call out my sources from last episode. Our www.tauntongazette.com, newenglandfolklore.blogspot.com, enterprisenews.com, lizzieborden warpsandwefts.com, and last but not least, www.heraldnews.com. And then the sources for today's episode: www.ancientpages.com, www.legendsofamerica.com, historyofmassachusetts.org, and the 2013 documentary Bridgewater Triangle. The two places I'm going to talk about in this episode are, we're going to talk a little bit more about some stuff, some history of the Hockomock Swamp, and also a place called Annawan's Rock. And you can't really talk about the history of Hockomock Swamp or of Annawan Rock without talking about a little thing called King Philip's War, which was actually the bloodiest war per capita in American history. And I say American history rather loosely, since during the time this happened, I mean, America was like a colony, not actually like America.
So more of the colonial history of the land.
Mm-hmm. But due to the population size at the time, yeah. I mean, it's bloodier than the Civil War.
Goddamn.
Yeah.
Although, that was mess of fucking shit.
Yeah. Not nearly so many people killed, but there were so few people. Lots of death compared to how many lives were around.
Yeah. Compared to the amount of lives actually there.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, King Philip was actually a Wampanoag sachem. So he was like, he was the head honcho of the tribe.
So he wasn't the French King Philip.
No, not the French King Philip. Philip was his given Christian name because, of course, from the moment we set foot off the Mayflower in 1620, we were like, oh, hey, Indigenous people, you need to be Christians.
I mean, really, from the moment that Columbus set foot on, in the Caribbean, they said, hey, you should be Christians. And you know what that did? Fuck up the world.
Right. It was pretty, it was a pretty poor idea.
Pretty fucking brutal.
So the native tribes that the English colonials interacted with, they're always trying to get them to convert to Christianity, and so of course they get given Christian names. His actual name was Metacom, or also called Metacomet, but his Christian name was Philip. And then people called him King Philip, since he was, like, the leader of his folk.
Yeah, yeah.
So King Philip began, like, to rebel against the English colonists. And so just a rundown of, like, who was who in King Philip's War: the Wampanoag tribe, led by King Philip; the Nipmuc tribe, who was allied with King Philip; the Narragansett tribe, also allied with King Philip, the Pocumtuk tribe allied with King Philip, and then the Mohegan tribe allied with the English colonists, as well as the Mohawk tribe also allied with the English colonists.
Bet they kicking themselves for that one.
Well, I mean, maybe they were just looking out for themselves.
I'm sure there was some sort of like something going on where mm-hmm. it was like my enemy's enemy sort of scenario.
Yes,
you know?
Because the Mohegan and the Mohawk, you know, were already kind of like not down with some of these other tribes. They were kind of already enemies. So,
and I imagine if they are from further inland than the coast, that maybe they don't know how the white people worked and how they can't really trust them because they don't really think that they're human.
Well, I mean, it was early days in the, you know, settlers versus the indigenous people. I mean, they landed in Plymouth, 1620, and this rolled around in, King Philip's War started in 1675. So
right. So
it's only like been about 50 years of, you know, hanging
bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there was white people going there since, you know, the early 1500s,
right.
The late 1400s.
Right, but as far as like establishing like an actual settlement and sticking around like the long haul, this has been
not
going
just
on.
Coming in for a quick rape and steal.
Right. They were like going to like permanently, like, you know, take lands and you know, commit terrible acts upon people. Yeah, and it just wasn't going to quit. For a long fucking time. Well, a few years before King Philip's War started, the colonists had become suspicious that Philip was planning an attack against them and had summoned him down to Taunton, Massachusetts, where they were just like, hey, what are your plans here? We think you might be up to some shady shit, and you are going to need to sign a peace treaty saying that you are not going to, like, make any war upon us, because we don't fucking trust you. And also, like, give us all your weapons. So,
Of course.
Yeah. So he did do that. And from that point on until January of 16, you know, until 1675 began, he just started kind of planning on the DL. Well, in January of 1675, John Sassamon, he was a Native American, and back in the day, he had been Christianized, and what they called them at the time was, they referred to them as praying Indians.
Because they were Christian, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
But they still were not, like, you know, fully accepted because they were still, you know, indigenous people. So of course they still had to be like treated with prejudice. But at least it was like, well, at least you've been Christianized now. Like,
yeah, I mean, they're still animals, but they're Christian animals.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's pretty gross.
It's absolutely gross.
Yeah. Anyways, John Sassamon, so that was his, you know, Christian name and everything, told the governor of Plymouth, Josiah Winslow, that King Philip was planning an attack. Now, Josiah Winslow did not do much with this information at the time. He just kind of sat on it for a bit, and I don't know what led to what, but at some point later in the month, on January 29th, John Sassamon was found dead under the ice in a pond. And a witness said that his neck had been broken. And a witness said that he had seen three Wampanoag people kill John Sassamon. Probably because he talked.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Well, you know what they say about snitches.
Right. You get your neck broke and tossed under the ice of a pond. Is that how that goes?
Yeah, I mean, that's got a nice ring to it. It really rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. Well, the three men accused of his murder were arrested, tried, and executed. And that did not occur until June 8th. So some months went by before that all happened. But once that did happen, that really just kind of got the ball rolling on the whole war sitch. On June 20th, 1675, a band of Poconoket warriors entered the town of Swansea, Massachusetts. Everyone was at church, of course, but they looted several homes and then set a couple of them on fire. And so on June 21st, the next day, Josiah Winslow ordered 200 men to be raised, and the Massachusetts Bay Colony officials prepared to negotiate with the Nipmuc, the Narragansett, Nyadic, and with King Philip himself. However, a couple days later, more houses were burned in Swansea, and there was just some general skirmishes kind of going back and forth. Some settlers were ambushed and killed, and then when people went to get help, those settlers were ambushed and killed. And on June 24th, King Philip responded to the skirmish by ordering attack on Swansea, and that became the first official battle of King Philip's War. Now, this fight would go on for about 14 months. It finally came to a close, and like I said, there was, you know, lots of butchery on both sides.
Yeah.
Not just fighting men, but of course, innocent men, you know, innocent as in non-fighting men, women, and children were butchered on both sides.
Anyone that they could kill, they would fucking kill.
Yeah. A lot of the, you know, colonies that have been popping up, several of them were burned to the ground and like all the houses destroyed, settlers killed, lots of you know, villages of natives also burned, women, children killed.
Yeah, I mean, sure, why not?
Yes, because war is just shit.
Yeah.
But in August of 1676, a native deserter, told this guy Benjamin Church about where King Philip was located, because during all these skirmishes, you know, King Philip always managed to kind of like, you know, have the upper hand, and they were always like getting away. It's almost really kind of blind luck. They had a really hard winter earlier that year that wiped a lot of them out because they couldn't get any like food and supplies. Like the whole time the English colonists were able to get more stuff from England, but the natives were just kind of stuck
living off
with
the land,
exactly. And then with the skirmish going on, they didn't really have an opportunity to you know, everything that they acquired would often get, you know, burned and what have you. So it was just kind of blind luck that the English colonists like essentially won the war, because really the Native Americans were much better at fighting.
They knew the territory.
And they, you know, they could track, like the English colonists were, you know, a little bit helpless when it came to
like the stuff, you know, the lay of the land. They're not from there.
No, and any of them that were soldiers were kind of used to like the British style of fighting, where it's like you're on a flat field, like to
stand in a line.
Yeah, stand in a line, march towards each other, you know, hack each other to bits. But as far as like more like guerrilla style warfare, like hiding out in the forests and the swamps and planning sneaky attacks,
totally.
The natives like totally had the upper hand there, and King Philip always managed to kind of like get away. But this native deserter told this guy Benjamin Church where Philip was, and that he had gone to this village near Mount Hope. And on August 12th, Benjamin Church led a company of soldiers to the area and found Philip camped out with a few of his warriors. The spot would later be known as King Philip's Seat. But Philip tried to flee, and a native, another, you know, praying Indian named John Alderman is the one who actually shot Philip. Benjamin Church had tried to shoot him, but he had missed. But John Alderman managed to kill Philip, and once he was shot, he was then beheaded. And his head was sold to the Plymouth authorities for 30 shillings. It was placed on a stake in the village where it remained for 25 years. Huh. One of Philip's hands was sent to Boston for display, and the four quarters of his mutilated body were strung up in four trees where they hung until they wasted away.
Just sending things to fucking places like that.
Now, King Philip's number two is his indigenous war chief, I guess, is what you would call him. His name was Anawan, and his fate was met just a couple weeks later on August 28th, 1676, at a large rock in Wahoboth Swamp, and that is what is now known as Anawan Rock. It was again Benjamin Church who found him, and he told Anawan that if he and the others that he was with would just surrender peacefully, he would not be executed.
Oh, right. I believe that.
Anawan is taken as prisoner back to Plymouth. The story goes that Benjamin Church left, and what in his absence, the local colonists at Plymouth decided to take matters into their own hand and kill Chief Anawan. Anyways,
as colonists will do,
right? And his head was put on a pike and kept there for also like 20 years.
Gross.
Yeah.
Like after 20 years, you're like, it's just a fucking skull at this point.
Mm-hmm.
All skulls look the same, basically, besides the wounds you inflict on them before you take them from the person.
Yeah.
People don't generally give up their skulls just, you know, haphazardly. Generally speaking, it's taken by force.
Yeah.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm by no means an expert.
Yeah, well, people's makes me think of Dumb and Dumber. Suddenly, remember the guy's bird, like they cut the bird's head off and then he taped it, or then he saw that it happened and he thought it fell off, you know, Tweety's head fell off.
Yeah.
People's heads just don't go falling off.
Time.
Oh my gosh. That's a classic. I love it. Well, the war had pretty disastrous effects on both the colonists and the natives. So by the end of the war, about 600 colonists had died. 12 out of 90 new settlements were destroyed. And as far as the native population, out of about 20,000 Native Americans in that the New England area at the time, an estimated 2,000 were killed. Another 3,000 had died of sickness and starvation. And about 1,000 were captured and sold into slavery.
Jesus Christ.
Gross. Yeah.
Just a big old swath of people.
Yeah.
Gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, a lot of people think that because of this, whole unfortunate chapter, and it's one of many unfortunate chapters in the history of America.
Basically, the history of the making of this country is one big unfortunate disaster.
It is. But as far as that particular unfortunate disaster goes, they think that contributes to why so many crazy things happen in the Bridgewater Triangle is because of King Philip's War. The Native Americans placed a curse on the land, or that the war just caused so many bad vibes that it's like, you know, forever haunted.
The sheer amount of blood spilled and bad feelings and shit.
Yeah. They just kind of like just sit there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Annawan Rock is known to be a very haunted place. Annawan Rock is close to Rehoboth within the Bridgewater Triangle. And mostly what's reported is there's spook lights, a lot of spook lights around. So like kind of like baseball size, like orbs of light.
Yeah.
Can be seen.
General, like random different things fly around or fly at you or fly above you or fly away from you.
Phantom campfires are also
like
seen.
Like Will-O-The-Wisp, kind of?
Phantom fires. Just, you can see them, you can hear them crackling, but then there is no smoke and nothing burned. And if you, like, go and investigate the fire, it, like, just suddenly, like, disappears and there's no evidence of any fire being there.
Strange.
Yeah. Also, people think that they can hear whispers in, you know, just whispers all over the place in, Native American language.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would be fucking weird because it's not like I would be able to, I'd be like, I don't know, it was some language.
Right. It was something. Like, I don't know. It was a person saying something, but I don't know what the fuck it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Ghost warriors have also been reported. Sometimes there's the fragrance of cooked meat. I guess that's associated with the phantom fires. Sometimes fragrance of rotting flesh. But again, you can't really find the source of any of the, you know, the weird
flesh
smells. The flesh rot, yeah. There's also, aside from the, ghostly whispers, sometimes, chanting is heard in conjunction with the phantom fires. So
like a, like a Native American war party or like just encampment or something or town. And
Yeah, and you can't ever seem to nail the sounds down to one spot. Just like with the phantom fires, you'll see them, and as you approach them, it disappears, and they might pop up in another place.
That's very, kind of fairy folk stuff, that right there.
It is. And people have also reported seeing a giant, like, ghostly face, which they think is the face of Chief Annawan. This is also close to a place called Profile Rock, but that I haven't talked about that much because it's actually like no longer in existence. It's no longer a profile. It looked like a profile of like a Native American, which they think was the father of King Philip. And that was supposed to be like the session before King Philip. They think that it's his profile, but it's actually not really a profile anymore because the nose part actually like eroded and broke off. And
so now it's just
rock.
That sucks.
It's no longer really profile rock, but if you look up pictures of it, it's actually pretty crazy how much it does look like the profile of a face. Yeah.
So it's fairly recently that it.
It is fairly recently that it eroded, the nose broke off. Yeah, it's within like the last decade or something. Now let's move on to the Hockomock Swamp. This was named the Hockomock Swamp by the Wampanoag people. And the translation of it means a place where spirits dwell. Now the colonial English settlers called the place the Devil's Swamp.
Of course they did.
Yes. Now you say, of course they did, but would you believe that the natives also kind of thought the place was evil? So
hey,
the Puritans weren't the only ones who were convinced that evil went on there.
Place just had a bad vibe, apparently.
I guess so. There have been artifacts found, human artifacts found that have been dated as far back as 9,000 years ago. From about 380 to colonial times, the Native Americans used the swamp as a source of food. They hunted there. And it was also had some sacred burial grounds in there. They viewed the Hockomock Swamp as sacred, but also evil. It was both worshipped and feared. The deity of death and disease called Hobomok was said to live in the swamp, is what they believed. And Hobomok was considered, you know, death, disease, destruction, evil, and he was, or he or it, was in opposition to Katanowit, which was the creator god.
Okay, so this was their, basically their Satan.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and he lived in the swamp. In the 17th century, during Kingsfell's War, the natives used it as kind of like a hiding place and a base of operations to launch assaults and also to flee and hide from the colonists. It's known to have a lot of sinkholes and quicksand. So things can disappear pretty easily out there in that swamp.
Yeah, well, I would say that most swamps, things could pretty easily disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
which is maybe that's why they're kind of viewed as really spooky and evil, because things can just, you know, get sucked right into the swamp, never to be heard from again.
Well, there's also lots of like dangerous critters in the swamps. That's where you find snakes. There's snakes there. Snakes are generally kind of aggressive creatures if they get snuck up on.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to sneak up on something you can't fucking see that might be asleep. Lots of like alligators and insects and sickness and. Seems like, I can see why they would, generally speaking, be avoidant of swamps.
Yeah. Now, Lauren Coleman, the guy who dubbed the term Bridgewater Triangle, he talks about in his book Mysterious America about some Massachusetts archaeologists who discovered an 8,000-year-old Indian burial site on this place called Grassy Island in the Hockomock Swamp. When the graves were open, the red ochre within the tombs bubbled and dissolved.
Ugh.
Yeah, destroying the bodies that they had excavated. And all their cameras malfunctioned, and they were not able to photograph anything. None of the film came out of...
Weird.
Yeah. And I couldn't really find it referenced anywhere except for like internet sites referencing this passage from Lauren Coleman's book.
Yeah.
And where, you know, it basically is, you know, like just this one passage, and it's like, okay, there's no photographic evidence. Everything dissolved because of this crazy, weird red ochre stuff. So, yeah, no actual evidence of 8,000-year-old dead people, but that doesn't mean that there aren't any there.
Right.
So, could the answer as to why so many crazy paranormal things happen here be as simple as, like, a Stephen King storyline? Like, ancient Indian burial grounds?
Right. Be like, oh.
Is that the reason? Really? Really?
That would be something else.
It could be.
And this whole time. Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah. Now, in the documentary The Bridgewater Triangle, there is a guy featured. His name is Tim Weisberg, and he's the host of a radio show called The Spooky South Coast. He's also an author of a couple of books, or a book. I didn't write that down. Sorry, Tim Weisman.
But he's an author, regardless.
He is an author, regardless. A published author. Now, he says this about the origins of all the paranormal weirdness in the Bridgewater Triangle. Quote, a lot of people seem to think that because of King Philip's War, the Native Americans placed a curse on the Bridgewater Triangle region. I almost wonder if King Philip's War is not the curse of all this, not the cause of all this paranormal activity, but just another byproduct of it. Maybe for some reason, whatever happens here predated that skirmish, and is something just inherent in the land.
Huh. So it's not because of that war, but it's just the land is evil or whatever.
It is, yeah. That's what I mean, and I kind of feel that way too. Like maybe the King Philip's War was especially horrible and bloody because it's just like maybe whatever is there it just amplifies it.
Yeah, you maybe. Know?
I mean, kinda there's like been New so York many City. Crimes. There's just, I mean, there's something going on besides just, I think, you know, a curse put on the land.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and who knows? Maybe it does have something to do with those 8,000-year-old bodies that disappeared in the Red Ochre. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe people aren't strong enough to do that kind of curse. Maybe that's just a cursed land. Maybe it is ancient curse. Maybe it's, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I think whatever it is, it does predate King Philip's War, and I would be in agreement that like King Philip's War was more a byproduct, because there's King Philip's War, and then like, you know, there's all like the weird crime and the weird paranormal stuff, the cryptids. Maybe it is just some sort of weird vortex that, and it yeah. has been and just continues to, you know, just be kind of its own. I don't know. It's just like it's like its own living, breathing like weirdness.
Yeah, that's his own weird area of weirdness.
Yeah, a weird area of weirdness.
It's got a certain ring to it.
Doesn't it just? And that's it. That's all I have on the Bridgewater Triangle.
That's it. Wow, that was quite a ride.
It was. It has been, and I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I hope you guys enjoyed it too.
Well, it was filled with interesting things and, you know, Pukwudgies. Pukwudgies are pretty cool.
They are indeed.
Well, I'm going to read an article from 12W Boy, which is a West Virginia news, like local news place. Oldest hotel in West Virginia haunted by several ghosts. Parkersburg, West Virginia. Nestled into downtown Parkersburg, the Blennerhassett Hotel was built in the late 1800s. Despite several setbacks over the years, fires, floods, and major renovations, the hotel is still open for guests to enjoy. With all the memories many locals have of the hotel, it's no surprise that the hotel has its fair share of ghost stories. The hotel was named after Harmon and Margaret Blennerhassett, but the ghosts reported at the hotel are generally from the industrial era. Guests and staff have said that they have seen children riding tricycles, vaudevillians, and men wearing top hats and bowler hats. That's just so cool because it tells about the history of the town through ghost stories, said Jason Burns, a West Virginia storyteller. Because you've got the colonial era on the island with the Margaret, and then you've got the industrial era on the mainland with the hotel. The woman in the elevator. One well-known ghost story at the Blennerhassett is the woman in the elevator. Legend has it that people will see the ghost walking into the elevator and vanish. Adam Dotson, hospitality guest service specialist at the Blennerhassett Hotel, recalled a time when a postman with a delivery spotted the ghost. He had never been here before. I told him to go through these doors and get on the elevator and go downstairs, and I would be right with him, Dotson recalled. After a few minutes, Dotson decided to go with the postman and make sure he knew where he was going. He caught the delivery man before the elevator closed. He looked over at me, and the first thing he said, serious as could be, "Is this place haunted?" remembers Dotson. The delivery man continued on to say that he caught the end of a woman getting on the elevator, and that before the door shut, he stopped it, but there wasn't anyone on the elevator. The cigar room door. The ghost of a woman has been known to frequent the door facing 4th Street on the Blennerhassett Hotel. The door had once been the entrance to the gentleman's cigar stand and smoking room in 1889. According to staff, the door now serves no purpose. Sherry Stevens, human resources manager at the Blennerhassett Hotel, said she spotted the ghost recently while walking to her car one evening. It was mid-afternoon. I was walking down the sidewalk across the street and something flashed, and it made me look in the direction of the door, Stevens recounted. So I stopped for a second, and I saw a woman looking right at me in the door window. Stevens said she saw the woman twice within a week, and she always looks in the window when she passes by now, but hasn't seen the ghost since then. She describes the woman as having been a white, expressionless face and bright red hair. Stephen said she could tell the woman wasn't from this era because she wore a light blue dress that had a frilly tall collar and a brooch. I wasn't scared, and she didn't look evil or anything like that, Stevens noted. It just made you stop and look, like, is this what I'm seeing? And then it went away. Shadow figures. Staff have said that they frequently see shadow figures in the basement. The figures are described as being silhouettes of people, sometimes wearing top hats, trench coats, and fur collars. The laundry room seems to be a hot spot for the ghosts, as many staff members have reported seeing the figures walk to a staircase at the end of the washing machine that leads to the bellman's closet in the main lobby. Dotson said he saw a shadow figure walk into his office, which is also in the basement. Thinking that the shadow was a server in black clothes, he looked in his office and nobody was there. The man with the bowler hat. One of the most famous ghost stories at the Blennerhassett Hotel is the story of the man with the bowler hat. The man is known to be seen in the dry storage area in the basement and in room 409, which is located a few stories above the storage area. Staff at the hotel believe that the ghost may be connected to the Kaltenecker building, which was built next to the hotel by businessman Johann Kaltenecker. The hotel acquired the building and incorporated that portion of the building during the 1985 renovation. Room 409 is the only two-story suite in the hotel. As well as seeing the bowler hat man, guests who stay in that room have reported hearing furniture moving around at night. One guest said the bowler hat man tried to hold her down in bed by her neck one morning. Yowza.
Eesh.
Dotson said he had an encounter with the ghost while staying in room 407, next door to the infamous room 409. He said he chose the room because it is known to be on the quiet side of the hotel, but he woke up to what sounded like a party in room 409. The next morning, Dotson told the front desk about how noisy the people in room 409 were that night, and the staff said he was the only one on the floor on that end of the hotel that night. Those who are interested in taking a historic tour of the hotel can call 304-422-3131. And this is actually a recent article, so it was published somewhat recent, November 5th, 21. So, you know, that's probably still a good number if you want to go to a haunted hotel.
Yeah, that's only like 4 months old, so.
Yeah. I personally wouldn't want to go to a haunted hotel because I want to get sleep. And I would imagine with all the ghostly what have yous, it's probably not a very restful place to stay. I mean, maybe some of the rooms, but definitely not next to room 409.
No, there's parties crazy. Going. There's parties going on there, crazy. And definitely not anywhere where the bowler hat guy frequents. You know,
no,
like that doesn't sound pleasant at all. Like
with the shadow figures, it's almost like was there a speakeasy down there back in the day, and those are just like 1920s people like listening to jazz music and getting wasted on like you know ha-ha juice or whatever the fuck.
I don't know. All I know is that bowler hat guy is highly he's a highly problematic ghost. Like that's
No, you shouldn't be. Yeah, I mean, no one without consent, no one should be holding anyone down any place by their neck.
No,
that is unless not you have cool. to. If they're like trying to kill you or something, then I guess go ahead. But within reason.
Right.
Within reason.
But if you're just staying at the hotel as a guest, trying to like get some sleep, you know. Foolishly banking on the fact that if you go to the haunted hotel to get some sleep, that should not happen. Not cool.
And I can see how a hotel would be haunted. I mean, a shitload of people go there. We talked about that with our Cecil Hotel episode.
I know. I was thinking about Cecil Hotel the other day. Like, goddamn, that place was just fucked up.
Yeah,
you know,
they're
demolishing it.
Are they really?
Already, yeah. It's no longer the stain on Maine.
And pretty soon it's no longer going to be on Maine.
It's just no longer going to be anything. I can't remember what they're going to build in its place, but it's yeah.
Yeah, well, you know.
A hotel no more, which I do not really disagree with that decision because
it's a pretty fucking old building.
And it's just fucked up. There's just been so much fucked up shit. I mean, we filled like a couple hour episode on like fucked up things happening just at this one hotel.
Yeah. People killing themselves left and fucking right.
People killing other people, the drinking of the dead people because of the lambs, which is still just freaky as shit, that whole mystery.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it's all fucking crazy. Yeah, it's so that's good riddance to that hotel, I guess.
Yeah, I think that that place just needs to not exist anymore.
Yeah, but and then like the Blennerhass, it wouldn't be so bad, except for the bowler hat ghost. Like the shadow figures, whatever, not so bad. You know, there's the ladies that are randomly walking around and disappearing could be worse. You know, a little bit off-putting, but not.
Yeah.
Like holding you down by the fucking neck.
Yeah, like that part's not cool, but overall it doesn't seem to be like a vortex to hell like the Cecil Hotel seemed to be.
Well, I mean, I guess the difference is one is in West Virginia and the other was in Los Angeles.
Right.
So, I mean, what's closer to hell? I'm guessing Los Angeles.
Yeah. I think you probably guessed correctly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that is all we have for you today. So I hope you guys enjoyed the big finale to the, you know, Bridgewater Triangle. Next week or next time we'll come at you with some other stuff.
Yeah, something completely new and different.
Completely new and different, yes. So if you'd like to take a look at our social medias, you can find us any place that we're at, Stranger Than or Stranger Than Podcast. We really aren't very good at social media-ing.
No, so, we're not. Sorry.
You know. Sorry, yeah. what do you want from us? We do want you to send us your stories. Send us your stories about ghosts or aliens or puckwudgies or you know, shadow people. Just any thing like that. Any weird paranormal or supernatural thing that may have happened to you. We'd love to hear your stories. We'd love to read your stories. You can have your name attached to them or not. It doesn't matter to us. You can join our Patreon. You should send those stories to strangerthanpodcast@gmail.com. You can join our Patreon, patreon.com/strangerthan. Here you will get your regular episodes ad-free, and you'll also get a bonus true crime episode, which Jonah will tell you about terrible, terrible people doing terrible, terrible things. Take a look at the website for the podcast syndicate we're a part of, ageofradio.org. Our little corner of that website is ageofradio.org/strangerthan, where you can stream our shows. On that podcast syndicate, there are tons of other podcasts to listen to. So if you need to listen to one, go to ageofradio.org and go through the list. There's a bunch and they're all good. And with that, I think we'll talk to you next time.
And stay strange.
Thank you.